From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to the program where we are bringing the Capitol to you each and every week from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln. And we have a lot of important updates to talk about on the show today, all affecting the issues that matter most: family, freedom, and life. We have international stories, national stories, and important local news affecting Nebraskans. And first, we hope that everyone had a very safe, happy, and wonderful Thanksgiving, celebrating with friends and family. It's always such an important time to pause and be with friends and family and give thanks for all that we have and are blessed with here in the United States. And I learned something new this year about the history of Thanksgiving. You know, if you were asked how Thanksgiving became a national holiday, many people would, of course, reference the Pilgrims. And maybe others might add that President Abraham Lincoln established Thanksgiving as a national holiday during the Civil War, or that President George Washington issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation in 1789. However, most are unfamiliar with the name Sarah Josepha Buell Hale and her connection to the holiday. Sarah Hale was a notable magazine editor who was instrumental in Thanksgiving becoming a national holiday. She was inspired by the Pilgrims' offering of thanks and all that they stood for, and their plight for religious freedom and a better way of life in the New World. Sarah Hale wrote numerous editorials along with letters to governors, senators, and presidents, including Abraham Lincoln, who was the fifth president she wrote to. After 36 years of advocacy, President Lincoln fulfilled Hale's request to make Thanksgiving a national holiday. And I bring this up because perseverance, like Sarah Hale's, and dedication and commitment to something you believe in is exceptional, and it reminds us of the power of gratitude. And because of faithful support through the years, Nebraska Family Alliance recently celebrated 30 years of influencing policy, mobilizing prayer, and empowering people. NFA is the state-based affiliate of Focus on the Family and your voice for faith and freedom issues at our state capitol. You can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org for more information on our organization and how you can partner with us to advance family, freedom, and life in Nebraska. And we use those words a lot and talk about these issues frequently because they should matter to us. They should matter more than anything, especially when we're talking about law and policy or culture. Marriages and families are the fundamental building block of all human civilization. Strong families are at the foundation of any thriving state and nation. And we can't have a strong state without strong communities. And you need strong families to have strong communities. The family plays an essential and irreplaceable role in our culture. We also know that marriage increases the likelihood that both fathers and mothers have good relationships with their children, and that when there is a married mother and father in the home, children do better. So why don't we hear about this more from our leaders and elected officials who are making law and policy and running for public office? We need more people talking about this. And thankfully, someone with a large audience and significant influence is trying to have this conversation. Recently, Fox News host Tucker Carlson talked about on his show how supporting marriage and children is the best, maybe the only way to save the country. Take a listen.
But there's a larger question that we ought to meditate on. The Republican Party is a conservative party. Republicans are supposed to care about families, not just a little bit, but above all. And yet, increasingly, the American family is vanishing. Young people can't afford to get married or to have children. Take a look at the numbers sometime. They're publicly available. They are shocking. And they foretell an ominous future for all of us. A country without strong families is a weak country. It is a volatile place, a chaotic place. It's a place susceptible to political demagoguery. It's what America is becoming. If you want to stop that slide, support families. It's that simple. Put another way, if your supposedly conservative economic program doesn't make it easier for young people to get and stay married and have kids, how is it really conservative? If couples are too poor to have children and you're not helping, why should I, as a conservative, vote for you? I should not vote for you. I will not vote for you. I will work against you. That is my pledge. Supporting marriage and children is the best, maybe the only way for Republicans or any of us to save the country. It will also win them elections. They should start right away.
That's an important message, and I hope more people start understanding it and sharing it. And another issue that's impacting Nebraska families here locally that I think also needs to be talked about more, especially by conservatives, is the issue of predatory gambling. And when we're talking about building strong families to have strong communities and strong states, well, you can't have strong families when you're encouraging people to go down a road of financial destruction. Financial problems are one of the biggest problems of relationship issues, of marriage issues, of family issues, and one of the leading causes of divorce. And it is extremely well documented how bad gambling is for families and also for businesses. And despite the well-documented social costs and economic instability brought on by expanding gambling, that's exactly what gambling interests keep wanting to do here in Nebraska. Now, we have talked about on the show previously the issue of the Ponca's Prairie Flower Casino in Carter Lake that is now officially opened, which again is less than a mile away from the Open Door Mission, one of the most important ministries in the entire city, serving hundreds and hundreds of homeless people every day and those who are suffering and living in poverty. And now they have to walk by a casino. These are the people who are struggling and also the most vulnerable and the most susceptible to go in and lose any remaining money that they have or anything that they might hope to have in the slot machines, because this casino is only filled with slot machines. And they were able to do this because the land that it's on, even though it's on Nebraska's side of the Missouri River and is a suburb of Omaha, being in Carter Lake, it is technically Iowa, where casinos and slot machine gambling is legal. And despite multiple pending lawsuits from citizens of Carter Lake, from the state of Nebraska, from the state of Iowa, from the city of Council Bluffs, they went ahead and rushed ahead with construction as quickly as they possibly could to get it open while all of the lawsuits are still pending. And whether you're for gambling or against gambling or you think it doesn't matter, the whole thing is a giant sham that's being built on a lie. When the land that this new casino in Carter Lake, that land that is built on, owned by the Ponca tribe, when they purchased that land over a decade ago, it was done so on the promise and agreement, official agreement with officials in Iowa, that the land was to be used to build a health clinic and never a gaming facility. And yet here we are today with a casino. And beyond that broken promise, the land that the casino is on is not part of the tribe's restored lands, which is what is necessary in order for the tribe to build a casino there. It shouldn't be happening. And perhaps inspired by all of this, now we have the Nebraska Racing Commission attempting to force their will on the entire state and against the Nebraska Constitution to implement a clearly unconstitutional and illegal form of gambling at racetracks. This happened just a few weeks ago. Nebraska does have a racing commission. They are in charge of overseeing horse racing in Nebraska. One of their duties or authority, rather, is not to make the law or create the law or change the Constitution. They simply don't have that authority, but never mind any of that, because at their most recent meeting, they went ahead and voted on whether or not to install historic racing machines at racetracks in Nebraska, which was approved by a shocker unanimous vote. And if you don't know, a historic racing machine is basically a slot machine. It just uses previously run horse races and you enter the money and make your selections, and you don't, it's all secret. You don't know what race it is, but it's essentially a slot machine and illegal in Nebraska. And we know that because in 2010, the Nebraska Racing Commission and racetracks supported a proposed constitutional amendment that was placed on the ballot, or tried to get placed on the ballot, but it was ultimately thrown off, and the law never changed on this issue. So less than a decade ago, they needed a constitutional amendment to do this that was never successful. The law hasn't changed. And then one day they wake up and decide that all of a sudden it is legal. And again, this comes back to not whether you are in favor or not in favor of gambling or indifferent, but whether or not we care about the rule of law and whether or not we are going to hold people in authority in check, or whether they can just impose their will on the entire state and step outside of the authority that they have been granted and even blatantly violate the Constitution. Gambling on electronic historic race machines is clearly unconstitutional. Not only that, even if it were constitutional, the Nebraska Racing Commission doesn't have the authority to do what they did and just implement it wherever they want. And third, even if it were constitutional and the Racing Commission did have the authority, well, they also failed to notify the public or post it on any agenda that they would be taking this up for consideration or voting on it, let alone approving it and actually trying to implement it. And the fact that they did that and kept it secret really tells you everything that you need to know. But thankfully, there have been some major victories against predatory gambling across the country, thanks to voters who made their position known at the ballot box. In Florida, citizens voted overwhelmingly to put the power to decide gambling expansion in the hands of the people instead of the legislature. This was a huge vote, and that's the right thing to do. The people of Florida also voted to abolish greyhound dog racing, thanks to collaboration from both anti-gambling organizations and greyhound protection organizations. Over in Idaho, voters rejected the deceptive proposal to legalize slot machines at Idaho racetracks. This is something that has happened or tried to have happen in Nebraska, and I'm sure we will see it again in the future, where they basically try to turn racetracks into casinos. And in a historic-making referendum, an Illinois community that introduced video gambling reversed that policy through a ballot question. Voters in Forest Park, Illinois, shut down video gambling machines in their community after they had been introduced. People need to take note of this. Expanding gambling has huge consequences. As we talked about, it creates severe social and economic costs and can ruin lives, families, business, and entire communities. The government should promote activities that support the well-being of its citizens and of families, not destructive and addictive behavior based on fraud and deception and lies. We'll keep you apprised on these developments and issues moving forward. And if you're not already, a great way to stay informed is to join the Nebraska Family Alliance e-network, so you get all of our updates and action alerts. And you can do that by visiting our website at nebraskafamilyalliance.org. The last story I wanted to bring up on the show today centers on religious freedom. And while Americans were celebrating Thanksgiving and our religious freedom heritage and strong tradition of religious liberty that we have in this country, overseas, China was continuing to crack down on Christians and people of faith, continuing to demolish crosses and even mandate surveillance with facial recognition technology in churches as religious persecution continues to rise. And this isn't new. This has been happening for a long time in China. But since 2012, China has imposed a stringent crackdown on Christians and other religious groups. And last week, in an interview with The Stream, Christian leader and China Aid founder Bob Fu elaborated on what's taking place in China. And what he shared was that authorities in China consider Christians one of the greatest threats to their power. And they've even started to list underground churches as the new Black Five top national security threats in China. Churches and Christians in China are now literally being classified as a national security threat because of their faith. The churches that you see in China are all government-sanctioned churches that are allowed to exist only under unique restrictions, including that each church has to install a facial recognition camera in front of the pulpit so that authorities can identify people in the congregation. Many classes of people are banned from entering into any church, including people under the age of 18, college students, doctors or medical professionals, civil servants, military members, and educators. Thousands of crosses have been burned and destroyed. Church leaders have been sentenced, arrested, and beaten simply for defending their faith. And these are government-sanctioned churches. The house churches don't have buildings or a cross. There are now even Bible-burning campaigns. This is how bad things have gotten in China. And in this interview, Christian leader Bob Fu explains how China has the most cameras in the whole world. They're on every street corner. And these facial recognition cameras are a significant part of their dynamic monitoring system. And on top of all of this, China is now also building the world's largest so-called social credit system. And this is really alarming stuff. For example, if you get a traffic ticket, then essentially 1 point of your morality score, so to speak, is deducted. And if you are found in the underground church, then your social score is essentially zero. And then they prohibit you from being able to do certain things, for example, like leave the country or buy airplane tickets and have access to certain goods or services. And again, while this type of persecution and targeting of people of faith is nothing new, it is pretty clear that the world is not paying attention as they should. We need to continue to pray, we need to continue to raise awareness, and we need to continue to encourage elected officials to act, from members of Congress to the president. They need to make both national and international religious freedom a priority. And thankfully, a lot of good people are in this administration who are working towards just that, safeguarding and advancing religious freedom, both here in the United States and around the world. But they need to be encouraged, and they need to put perpetrators, anyone who is carrying out these heinous acts or violating religious freedom abroad, they need to be put on the sanctions list. The world needs to know that we are paying attention, and this will not ever be tolerated. And all of these issues that we have talked about today, why politicians should care about families, supporting marriage and children, expanded gambling, religious freedom, like pretty much every other issue, this all comes down to worldview. How do you view the world and human nature? What is the proper role of government? What is the proper role of the church? Where are we headed as a nation, and what can or should be done about it? These are all big questions. And recently, our executive director, Karen Bowling, had a really incredible opportunity to sit down and talk with Dr. George Barna on cultural transformation. And Dr. Barna is an author of more than 50 books and, of course, founded the Barna Research Group in 1984. And as the leading researcher on the intersection of faith and culture, Dr. Barna is now the executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute and is commonly referred to as the most quoted man in the church today. And I want to play part of their conversation, and you'll get to hear a really important discussion about what worldviews are dominating our society today. For example, only 10% of American adults have a biblical worldview. Politics is downstream from culture. What does this mean for our country when only 10% of American adults have a biblical worldview? And how is that going to impact the laws and policies that are being made and governing our society? These are big questions, but they're important, and it's what matters. So here's Karen Bowling with Dr. George Barna.
Well, I want to have a conversation about the research that you are doing, and what does your research reveal about America's collective worldview? And are we in crisis?
Yeah, I think it is a crisis. When you look at the data, what it shows is that currently only 10% of American adults have a biblical worldview. And it kind of gets worse because even if you look at just born-again Christians, not people who call themselves Christians, but people who we would categorize as born again by virtue of the fact that they say that when they die, they'll go to heaven, but only because they've confessed their sins, have accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior. That's 30 to 31% of the population. With that small segment of the population, only 30% of them have a biblical worldview. So clearly we've got issues within the church in terms of worldview, much less outside of the church. We know that there are literally dozens of worldviews that people could possess, And what we find is that those other worldviews are dominating in American society today.
What are the most dominant factors that impact one's worldview?
Well, I think the most important thing for us to recognize about that is the fact that a person's worldview develops between about 18 months of age and 13 years of age. So the first factor that impacts it is age, and we've got to get there early. The world is having a dramatic impact on the worldview of young people, and that worldview doesn't change very much after the age of 13. I've been studying this for a quarter of a century now, and it's held consistent that entire time. What is it that influences the worldview itself? Largely, it's media content. Secondly, we find parental guidance has a big impact. Thirdly, laws also convey a lot of information to people about what's right and what's wrong. Those three are the most dominant things, and then you've got strong support coming from schools and peers in terms of influence. Now, some people are probably thinking, oh, that old man, he forgot to say the church. I didn't forget. As we looked at all the influences on people's worldview, what we found is that the Christian church has shockingly little impact on how people's worldview is developed. So there's room for growth in many respects.
I was looking at some of the data, and Christians define success. Only 13% of Americans believe that obedience to God demonstrates success. And so when you're talking about the impact that the church has, it's pretty minimum.
It is. I mean, there are a lot of different influences on Christians, and given the fact that we know that 7 out of 10 of born-again Christians do not have a biblical worldview, stats like that are shocking, but they're not uncommon. And so there are a lot of different beliefs that we look at, a lot of different behaviors that we look at. One of the things that was different about our most recent worldview study was that we not only asked people what they believe, but we also asked what they do, because you do what you believe. So if your behavior is different than what you say you believe, that tells me you don't really believe that. They've got to be consistent with each other, because you don't do things that are inconsistent with what you believe to be right or appropriate. So we have a lot of challenges in American society today of trying to get people not just to parrot what they think might be the right belief, but to incorporate it into how they're living. That's when it truly becomes part of your worldview.
One of the observations you mention in your research is that regular religious activity does not ensure having a biblical worldview. What is your thought about how we can correct that trajectory in society?
Well, one of the things that we've learned in studying how people's lives are transformed is that it's important to be teamed up with individuals who are further down the spiritual development path than you are. And by that, I don't mean that they know more Bible verses or they attend church more consistently. But I mean, these are people whose lives are closer to Christ than yours is. And the reason why that's important is because if you can get them to coach you or mentor you, you know, part of that relational process wherein you're both focused on trying to become more Christ-like, and you found somebody who's a stop or two further down the road than you are, that person can help you overcome the challenges and the obstacles that you're going to face. They don't know everything. They're not perfect either. But at least there's somebody who understands the challenges that lie before you. So that is actually one of the most significant things that we found. And we would hope that people would also look at their day-to-day environment and look at what kind of media are they being exposed to, because that continues to have an impact. Who are your friends? What kind of people do you hang out with? All of those kinds of things make a big difference in terms of what you're going to think, what you're going to do, who you are.
Some really fascinating and important insight from Dr. George Barna. And as you can tell, with all of the competing worldviews and the influence of social media and an ever-changing digital age and environment that we live in, we have a lot of work to do to ensure Nebraska is the best place to live, to work, and to raise a family. But as we were reminded this week, we have a lot to be thankful for. That's all the time for today. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.